You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, August 19th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Ben Wickler, chairman of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, will join us. Also on the program, night two. The DNC brings Iraq war perpetrator platforming, fossil fuel defunding dropping, AOC smearing, and a genuinely nice expression of the diversity of the Democratic Party and the American people. Mixed bag. Meanwhile, Mitch McConnell prepares to lowball on the coronavirus relief package. And the Republican-chaired Senate Intel report goes even further than the Mueller report and confirms much of Russiagate.
Russiagate 1.0?
Russiagate 1.0. Under pressure, Louis DeJoy backs off postal cuts. But mail-in voting obstacles remain, ladies and gentlemen. Clinton-appointed federal judge blocks Trump's attempt to end transgender health care protections. Portsmouth, Virginia police want to do an end run around the prosecutor to charge with felonies people who were involved in the protests against Confederate statues. Laura Loomer wins her GOP primary, and a congressional QAnon will be wants Tlaib and Omar to adopt the Christian Bible. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. Our guest will join us in a little bit later. We're mixing up the format today, not significantly, but a little bit. We will probably take your calls later in the program as per normal. And there we go. Just also wanted you to know tomorrow will be a typical Thursday that we've been doing over the course of this month. We will be playing a best of interview by Michael Brooks from this program. And then Jamie and Matt and Brendan will be here with you on Friday. My microphone has a life of its own today. On Friday, Nomi Const will be here, and she will be holding down the fort, doing a recap, doing one of the DNC shows that she's been doing. They've been great. And the guests that she has on Friday are going to be nuts. Let me just drop this on you, Chomsky. Anyways, but today, and you could tune into her show today. Today, Sarah Nelson, she is the president of the Flight Attendants Union. We've interviewed her on this program, I think on Ring of Fire as well. The Flight Attendants Union basically broke the back of the Republicans' government shutdown plan. And she is a rising star in the, if not already a risen star, in the union movement in this country. She will have a panel. Nabila Islam, Matt Stoller, Francesca Fiorentini will be talking about the DNC. We will be talking about it a little bit on this program today. Obviously, a little bit with Ben Wickler. but check out Nomi's show. You can go to youtube.com, The Nomiki Show on YouTube, and watch it at 3 p.m. You can watch it tomorrow at 3 p.m. and then Friday. It's going to be here on noon. So check that out. Let's do this brief. Here's Steve Ducey. You know, one of the things about the Republican, and right now, Mitch McConnell, the negotiations were going on between Nancy Pelosi and Steve Mnuchin. And Donald Trump's been saying, like, we really don't need to do anything. I think we're fine. And I think Donald Trump's getting that. I mean, I think Donald Trump's getting played a little bit, frankly, by the Senate Republicans. You recall there was reporting, I don't know, about 3 or 4 months ago that were basically saying if things look like they do now after Labor Day, the Republicans maybe are going to cut a little bait. I don't think they're going to do so publicly. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it publicly in any way because they're all afraid because their voters are all still Trumpistas. But that means they're going to start to plan for a Biden administration. And what that means is they are not looking to save anything. So Senate Republican leaders are preparing to offer a $500 billion relief package that will include extended payments for unemployed people, but it'll be smaller, and small business. The measure is going to include $10 billion for the post office, which is not enough for long-term fix. And then they are hoping for negotiations over a far larger coronavirus bill expected to resume after Labor Day. So the idea that the Senate Republicans would pass something now, of course, is just their way of saying, like, if Trump looks like he's losing after Labor Day, we don't have to go back into these big negotiations. We got enough just to cover us and make it look like we've done something for the next month or two. So that they're trying to protect some of their Senate seats. That's the game. We will see if the Democrats are too short-sighted to realize that. The way they've been playing, it's total prevent defense. But here's Steve Ducey on Fox and Friends sitting down with Liz Cheney and talking about his concept of the economy. I mean, I want you to think about, like, for a moment, what does the economy mean to you? Like, when people say the economy, what does that mean? It doesn't mean like the when we talk about a good economy, what do we want the economy to do?
The numbers get bigger on CNBC.
Well, for some people, I mean, that's my point, is that I think when most people think like I want a good economy, that means that my family and my neighbors and everybody else's family are able to make enough money without having too much stress to be able to provide for their families food and shelter and maybe, you know, a couple of weeks of vacation, you know, that's basically, it's the well-being of as many people as possible in the country should be the measure of how the economy is doing. But for some people, it's something different. And here's Steve Ducey to sort of stumble over that.
Congressman, the number one issue facing America right now.
Pause it for 1 second.
The coronavirus.
I just want to make it clear that Liz Cheney is a congresswoman. Let's start again.
Congressman, the number one issue facing America right now, obviously the coronavirus. When the coronavirus really hit and we realized things are going to have to get shut down for a while, the stock market absolutely tanked. Yesterday marked the end of the shortest bear market in history because, just like the president said, it was going to be a V. It went down and it has gone clear back up. It's right on the edge of record highs as well. And one of the things that Democrats for the last couple of months have thought, okay, Donald Trump's not going to have the economy to run on. But right now, aside from the unemployment, which is still staggering, the economy is doing okay.
Well, look, and I think it's absolutely clear to the American people, you know, the Democrats have combined the failed policies of the past with this fraud of socialism that they see as our future. And if the Democrats prevail, we will not have an economic recovery. Every single policy that they've put forward is one that will make it much, much more difficult for us to recover from the pandemic, to get the economy back going again where we need it to be. The economic policies that we've seen from President Trump and from the Republicans in the House and the Senate over the course of the last 3.5 years, the cuts in regulation, the cuts in taxes, those are the kinds of things that we've got to see to bring this economy back again, to get people back to work. Socialism, which...
Okay, whatever. The point being that the only thing that they're sort of assessing is the economy, is the stock market. And then, you know, there's a lot of the millions of people who are out of work. But aside from that, like what, you know, we know that 80% of the stocks are owned by something like 20% of the people. And that fully 60% of the country doesn't even participate in the stock market. This is the vision of, well, certainly on Fox. They're just naked about it. At least the Democratic Party pays some lip service. And I'm not sure how many of the people in the Democratic Party fully believe that the economy should be measured as to how it functions for the greatest number of people. But on Fox, they don't even pretend. And to hear Liz Cheney just wax poetically about socialism.
It's amazing how they've been talking about this as the Democrats have Colin Powell and John Kasich speak at the convention.
Well, they're desperately trying to do, you know, I mean, that's what they're desperately trying to do. And that's what the Democrats are running on, this complete prevent defense. And I mean, we'll talk about that in a moment. And that is, all of us who really know something about the prevent defense know that that is not a winning strategy. Now, in this instance, it might be. Broadly speaking, you know, when you've got a coronavirus,
sometimes the lead is big enough.
Sometimes the lead is big enough. And I don't know, you know, well, we'll talk about that. I mean, I watched the convention. And I just wonder, like, what would they have done if there was no coronavirus? Now, they would have come up with something. But I wonder if, I wonder how much that has contributed to this prevent defense. But we'll talk about that in a moment. Oftentimes I'm looking around for charities that we will contribute to via the show, like as we do merchandise stuff. Sometimes I'm looking for charities that I want to contribute to personally. And with the data that came out, I mean, this data has been floating around for a while. There's been a lot of evidence that giving directly to people, giving like people living in poverty money, actually gets them out of poverty. I mean, I know that sounds sort of like overly intuitive, but that is the case. And now people have all sorts of different charities they like to give to. Every year across the globe, you have people who are suffering from diseases that are easily preventable, or things like poverty that's easily preventable. If you are one of those people who are in a position to give and want to help, you want to try and support charities. I think everybody knows this, where your next donation will save and improve lives the most. You want as much bang for your buck as possible. And that is the mission of GiveWell.org. For over 10 years, GiveWell.org has helped donors find the charities and projects that save and improve lives the most per dollar. And here's how. GiveWell dedicates over 20,000 hours a year to researching charitable organizations and handpicks a small set of the highest impact, evidence-backed charities. GiveWell isn't asking for donations themselves. They're asking that you give to the amazing charities they've recommend, like the Helen Keller International Against and Against Malaria Foundations. Plus, GiveWell.org takes no fees, so all of your tax-deductible donation will go to be used to be help these charities. Through GiveWell, I found Give Directly. I don't know that they're, I don't think they're, I think that's the give part is just a coincidence. But Give Directly is a charity that gives money directly to people living in extreme poverty. And particularly after we saw the implications of the $1,200 per person under the $70,000 threshold and the bump in unemployment benefits from the federal government, poverty was at its lowest rates in this country in ages. And so I went on to givewell.org. I looked through the charities. I saw Give Directly. And that's the charity I'm now focused on these days. So if you want to have even more impact with what's going on, you can donate soon. Any of our listeners who become new GiveWell donors will have their first donation matched up to $100 when you select podcast as to how you heard about it and Majority Report at checkout. This matching offer is as good as long as funds last. So head over to givewell.org. When you select podcast and Majority Report, you'll get your donation. And they have a bunch of different of charities on there that you can give to, and you'll get that matched. So check that out. Also, we all shop online. Particularly through this pandemic, when I was inclined to use a certain company, I'm not going to use the name because I don't know if the sponsors want me to use that name, but I decided I'm not going to go to this one thing that's like a clearinghouse. It's almost like its own market. And I'm going to go to specific stores directly. But then you have that issue of like, am I getting the best deal? Well, a while back, actually, I had made sure that that was never a problem. Honey is the free browser extension that scours the internet. It looks for the promo codes, applies the best one it finds, and adds it to your cart automatically. So once you put it in as a browser extension, you don't have to worry about that anymore. It used to be, I would sit Mila down. If you're going to buy some clothes from wherever this place is, you search for the coupon code, then you try it, and the third one works. Maybe the fourth one works, and then you save $5-$10. It's better than this, you know, poke in the eye. It adds up to some real cash. But the beauty with Honey is that when you check out, Honey button drops down, and all you have to do is a click and apply and hit apply coupons. Wait a few seconds as Honey searches for coupons it can find for that site. If they find one that works, you'll watch as the prices drop. Honey has found over 17 million members, over $2 billion in savings. Honey supports over 30,000 stores online. Like I say, I had to walk Mila through the whole coupon code thing, and then I just got her Honey, and then we don't have to deal with it. And she's buying all sorts of stuff. Clothing. And sometimes she tells me, I got a couple of bucks off. It's pretty exciting. If you don't already have Honey, you could straight up be missing out on free savings. And it's literally free, and it installs in a few seconds. And by getting it, you're doing yourself a solid and supporting this podcast. So get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/majority. That's joinhoney.com/majority. All right, let's play a couple of clips of the of what we saw last night. I got to tell you, and do we have any clips of the nomination thing, Brendan? I don't think we pulled that. I think we forgot.
Yeah, we can pull it though.
All right, pull something like that. Because, all right, look, first we'll do the things that I found a little bit annoying. Or maybe not some, well, let's do the thing that I found annoying. Let's get that over with. The Democrats are clearly playing with this convention a prevent defense. Right. Where it's just, we're going to put up any potential critique. We're going to give, they're basically doing, it's an extension of Joe Biden. Right. I mean, why did people vote for Joe Biden? They voted for Joe Biden because they thought that he was the guy most situated to beat Donald Trump. And why is that? It's because they just thought he was sort of more or less bland. In terms of his policies, and wasn't going to in any way be aggressive enough in dealing with the problems of this country that the Republicans could latch onto. Like Matt said earlier, the idea of Lindsey Cheney talking about socialism with Joe Biden as the nominee is absurd. They've tried desperately to say that Joe Biden is in Bernie Sanders' pocket. Nobody buys it. We wish. And it doesn't work. And the brainiacs at the Biden campaign want to continue with this, where this is the second night in a row they put on prominent Republicans. I think maybe technically Colin Powell is not a Republican anymore after he supposedly was fooled into leading us into a horrible, disastrous war for obviously more disastrous if you were an Iraqi. Depending on whose count you want to, if you want to go with the Defense Department's very conservative count, you're talking a couple hundred thousand people. If you're going with other counts, it can go anywhere from 400,000 to 1 million people. We do know for a fact that there were 2 million internal refugees, 2 million external refugees. We know that everything that happened with ISIS subsequent to that, also a direct function of this. The war in Syria also could very well have been, at least in part, a function of this destabilization. I mean, I could go on and on. And I'm not saying that Colin Powell is one of those guys who needs to be on a docket for crimes against humanity. I would let that up to prosecutors, whereas I feel more confident about George Bush and Dick Cheney. But the idea that we are bringing him out, and I don't care if he's still popular with your conservative uncle who listens to NPR. The idea that we are bringing this guy out there and saying, this is a voice of reason we should listen to. He effed up at best, and it cost hundreds of thousands of people their lives. But here he is talking about his shared values with Joe Biden.
Former Secretary of State Colin Powell. 100 years ago, a young immigrant left a dirt farm in Jamaica and set out for America. 3 years later, a ship pulled into New York Harbor, and a young Jamaican woman gazed up at the Statue of Liberty for the first time. They became my parents, and they inspired me to finish college and join the Army. This began a journey of service that would take me from basic training to combat in Vietnam, up the ranks to serve as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Secretary of State. The values I learned growing up in the South Bronx and serving in uniform were the same values that Joe Biden's parents instilled in him in Scranton, Pennsylvania. I support Joe Biden for the presidency of the United States because those values still define him, and we need to restore those values to the White House. Our country needs a commander-in-chief who takes care of our troops in the same way he would his own family. For Joe Biden, that doesn't need teaching. It comes from the experience he shares with millions of military families, sending his beloved son off to war and praying to God he would come home safe. Joe Biden will be a president we will all be proud to salute. With Joe Biden in the White House, you will never doubt that he will stand with our friends and stand up to our adversaries, never the other way around. He will trust our diplomats and our intelligence community, not the flattery of dictators and despots. He will make it his job to know.
Pause it for one second. I just want to remind you that Colin Powell's story is that he was lied to by George Tenet, the head of the CIA. That's his story. That's the Reformation Project. That's what Larry Wilkerson goes around and says. His number two. So, like, are you really getting in front of the American public? The Democrats are platforming you, and you're saying he's a guy who's going to trust his intel agencies? How about having just like, you know, maybe the proper skepticism and, really make an assessment as to what the information he's getting? Or maybe like he's not going to out of hand dismiss them because they're not telling him what they want to hear. That Colin Powell would have a little experience with. That was the administration he served in. Another thing, Joe Biden will never be my commander in chief. Because I'm not in the military. like most Americans who are not in the military. He is not the commander in chief. He is the president. He's the commander in chief of the military, but not of the country. So I'm not going to salute Joe Biden because I'm not in the military. So it's not when we will all salute. We won't all salute Joe Biden. Continue.
That's in our intelligence community, not the flattery of dictators and despots. He will make it his job to know when anyone dares to threaten us. He will stand up to our adversaries with strength and experience. They will know he means business. I support Joe Biden because beginning on day one, he will restore Americans' leadership and our moral authority. He'll be a president who knows that America is strongest when, as he has said, we lead both by the power of our example and the example of our power. He will restore America's leadership in the world and restore the alliances we need to address the dangers that threaten our nation, from climate change to nuclear proliferation. Today, we are a country divided, and we have a president doing everything in his power to make it that way and keep us that way. What a difference it will make to have a president who unites us, who restores our strength and our soul. I still believe that in our hearts, we are the same America that brought my parents to our shores, an America that inspires freedom around the world. That's the America Joe Biden will lead as our next president. Thank you very much.
All right. Now, look, you know, I mean, even if they had just done this as an ad, you know, I mean, because I get it. I get the appeal. And I appreciate that he says the things that really threaten us, like climate change and nuclear proliferation. But they could have just put it on an ad.
Yeah, what's the point of targeted advertising if I also have to watch this stuff?
Exactly. It's just, you know, part of the reason why we have some of these problems is a function of the lack of accountability that we hold our past leaders to. And I'm just sorry. I'm not saying that the guy needs to be in a gulag, but I just, you know, there is a big distance between being platformed at the Democratic National Convention and going into a gulag. All right. Let's take a, I think we got him on the line. We will bring him on in just a second. Let's do it. Let's play a little bit of music and then we'll be right back with Ben Wickler, the chairman of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Okay, on the phone, it is a pleasure to welcome to the program the chairman of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Ben Wickler. Ben, welcome to the program.
Sam, it's great to be with you. Appreciate it.
Is it the first time you've ever been on the program? No.
You can't be. I don't know. I think I was on another Move On.
Oh, yeah, or maybe a Vaz. Ben and I first met each other back in the Air America days.
2004.
When you were a producer of the biggest show on the network, and I remember walking into you were producing Al Franken's show. I walked into the Franken's office. I looked up at the board, and you guys had created this massive full wall length grid of like every show for the next like month. And I just, I walked out of that room and I walked down the hall and I almost started weeping based on, I was like, where am I going to get my Ben Wickler And you actually sent me somebody. That's how I, Josh Horton ended up working on the show. But, that level of expertise and organization is now going towards making sure that we win Wisconsin. I want to talk about that a little bit, but let's talk about the convention. It is sort of taking place in Milwaukee, like it was supposed to. Give me a sense of like what was going on in terms of like the preparation for Milwaukee, why Milwaukee was so crucial to have it there, and to what extent is there sort of like, is Wisconsin getting, I don't know, the convention bounce?
So there's one reason why the convention was going to be in Milwaukee. And that reason is that according to just about every model, if you do three states, two states, or one state, Wisconsin is the state most likely to tip the Electoral College one way or the other if the race is close. The Trump campaign last year had a briefing where they said it was secret, recorded, and leaked. If we win Wisconsin, we win the election. If we lose Wisconsin, we lose the election. And a convention is a tactic to win the election. That is the fundamental premise. So the DNC had this election process. They looked at, you know, Florida and Texas and Wisconsin, and it didn't hurt that Tom Perez's wife was from Wisconsin. His daughter was a UW-Madison student, and he got married here in our state. But fundamentally, he was looking at the math, and this is where it had to be. So Milwaukee got the pick. And then the other side of the convention unfolded, which is when you have a convention, especially in a city that's relatively small, like Milwaukee, relative to other major metropolises, it was going to be a giant, giant boon to the city. The biggest spotlight that had ever been cast on Milwaukee. 50,000 visitors, hundreds of millions of dollars of economic stimulus. You know, if you talk to like performing magicians and musicians and, you know, people who make murals and all this kind of stuff, it was going to be this incredible moment to actually shine, to have national eyes and ears on their stuff. Every venue was booked. Every hotel room was booked. Every hotel room for miles around, all the way to like Madison and, you know, suburbs of Chicago, were booked up for the convention. And then the pandemic hit. And some form of it was going to hit no matter what, but Trump completely failed the response. And so while other countries like had their COVID moment, had their shutdown, got their act together, got it under control, have reopened, have stuff happening, you know, you see the photos from Wuhan, from South Korea, from, you know, all over the place, there's stadiums full of people doing stuff here. What started as a few weeks shutdown went into a total shutdown, and now the convention is fully, completely virtual. And it has been very tough for Wisconsin to not have the kind of like civic, economic stimulus and energy and excitement. But this amazing thing happened over the last couple of days, which is that people had sort of had their hearts broken, and now we're actually experiencing a convention that has stuff happening that wouldn't even have been possible if it had been in person. That roll call could not have happened. And that right now, like when I talk to the Wisconsin delegates to the convention, who are going to have the experience of their lives, you know, going to all these parties, all this kind of stuff, they're pumped. They're super excited about what they're seeing. And that feels really good.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, the roll call, because I just talked about how annoyed I was about Colin Powell being, you know, sort of platformed there. Like, you know, I'm okay with an ad because you got to win the election. But I just think that I hate the idea of the institution of the Democratic Party whitewashing anybody who was that, that involved in selling us the Iraq war, frankly. But, the roll call thing, I gotta say, I mean, I was watching this. It is, first of all, it's better than it is when you do it in the convention hall, because you actually get to see the people in the context in which they live, and you get to see them and hear them in a way you don't get it, you know, in the roll call. And I was just genuinely impressed with how diverse this country is and how diverse the Democratic Party is. And I'm sure, you know, part of that is constructed to make it look diverse. But when I contemplate like what the Republican Party, if they were to do that, I mean, that would be the comparison would be shocking.
Yes.
I mean, it would be shocking. You just have one white guy after another, more or less the same age in 50 states. And what we saw on that thing, do we have a clip of that, Brendan? We want to play a little bit of a clip of it. It was just really impressive. This is just the beginning. It starts with A. Go ahead.
7 votes for Bernie Sanders and 12 votes for the next president, Joe Biden.
California, home to our next vice president, Kamala Harris, cast 231 votes for Bernie Sanders
and 263 votes for our next president, Joe Biden.
Indiana casts 2 votes for my friend Bernie Sanders and 86 votes for the next president, Joe Biden.
I mean,
Kansas Empire State proudly cast 10 votes for Bernie Sanders and 35 votes for our next president, Joe Biden.
Montana cast 1 vote for Bernie Sanders and 18 votes for our next president, Joe Biden.
New Mexico proudly cast 4 votes for Bernie Sanders and 42 votes for the next president of the United States of America, Joe Biden.
Okay.
North Carolina cast.
Yeah, this is the shortened version. And, you know, you have people on there who, you know, I don't know how many indigenous folks were on there. I mean, it was just like a cross section of Americans. I think there was a couple people delivered in Spanish. I found the whole thing really impressive.
People spoke their tribal languages. I watched that and I was like, this has always been a multilingual country and it will always be a multilingual country. And that is like, the diversity was so inspiring because of this, you know, shared sense of like, we're going to do this together. We're in this together. And that is actually the only way that Democrats win, is to be able to actually pull people together across race and geography and ethnicity and, you know, tribal affiliation, all these other dimensions. That is what this party is. And it was seeing ourselves reflected back from the screen was amazing.
All right. So with that said, let's also address the other question. First off, do you have a sense, because one thing that we saw it in the context of that roll call, we had some union people in there. You had like that shot of Pete Buttigieg, who was sort of like in this like modern techie looking office building. There was a couple other guys from like Delaware who looked like they were, you know, just heading off to have a drink at the country club. But there was also a lot of working people who were in there. And so, you know, I mean, one of the problems I think that we had in Wisconsin, although I wanted you to talk about it, was one like it was with working people and primarily black folk too in Milwaukee, in terms of turnout. Like, give me a sense of what went wrong in Wisconsin last year.
So I think you're asking about what went wrong in Wisconsin in 2016.
Last time.
Yep. So 2016, first of all, both candidates wildly underperformed. People did not like either of them. They both got fewer votes than Obama, who won in 2008 and 2012, also fewer than Romney, who lost in 2012, and fewer than George W. Bush and John Kerry in 2004.
Wow.
Hundreds of thousands of people didn't vote. And both the Green and Libertarian candidates got more than the winning margin in Wisconsin, which was 22,748 votes. So there was a lot of none of the above voter response that year. Second thing is, the polling was wildly off. And so both candidates for most of the race, and then the Clinton campaign specifically until the very end, thought that Wisconsin wasn't a battleground state. The first ad that the Clinton campaign ran was started the week of October 28th. The Trump campaign sort of sensed this opportunity and started quietly doing stuff in Wisconsin for a bit longer than that. But it just wasn't like nobody's model had Wisconsin as the tipping point.
We should be clear. We should be clear that when you say the polling was way off, the Wisconsin state polling.
Yes, exactly. The polls of Wisconsin found that if you average the Real Clear Politics polling average on election day, had Clinton up 6.5 points
right
in Wisconsin, and
Feingold too, right? And Feingold,
Feingold was ahead the entire time. I saw him a bunch of times that year. And he never was behind in the polls, and it was all wrong. And it was like, so if you look at how it was wrong, turnout was down in Milwaukee by 40,000 votes relative to 2012. That was about an eighth of the swing from Obama to Trump, 2012 to 2016. Half the swing was in communities where less than 1,000 people cast ballots. So it was this massive margins that were racked up in small towns in rural Wisconsin all over the state. Suburbs actually moved towards Clinton in 2016, and Dane County smashed every turnout record and, you know, made it a lot closer than it would have been otherwise. So, you know, the biggest thing was small town of rural areas and Milwaukee. And I think one of the structural factors was that, a couple of structural factors I'll point to. One is the smashing of organized labor, systematic dismantling of the labor movement in Wisconsin by the Walker team, which there's one political science study that really carefully looks and finds that when you go from being a, you know, unionized state to a right to work state, it shifts the presidential vote share by 3.5 percentage points. Because unions, being part of a union, hearing from your union about who's going to look out for your interests from someone you trust, that changes how you vote. And unions are engines of get out the vote operations, not only for union households, but for everybody, including in communities of color. In Wisconsin, AFSCME was created, public employee unionism was created in Wisconsin. And that's who Scott Walker went off after first with Act 10 and the massive Wisconsin uprising in 2011.
Yep.
So the smashing of labor, and the other side is just straight up voter suppression, which included some of the harshest voter ID laws in the country, gerrymandering, which makes state legislative races less competitive, which drives down turnout, the changes in the way people register to vote, which made it hard to do in-person voter registration drives, like all these different changes that really were targeted to suppressing especially black votes and Latino votes to a lesser extent. And then young people, they made student IDs only work for 2 years. So if you're in a 4-year college, you need to go get a new ID in order to be able to vote. We just beat that in court, but that was in place in 2016. So all, like, there's so many things that they did surgically to make it hard for us to win. And that partly, like, that threw off the polling because polling doesn't account for whether people are going to get their votes suppressed. Yeah, there are other problems with polling too. So this year,
and we should say, let me just interject one thing here. When you have a state where everybody assumes is not in play, the resources that go into polling are less. There's not as many polls. There's just, because there's just not as much of a market for, because people have to spend money on the polls and somebody's got to pay for it. And they just don't spend as much energy or attention on a state that they don't think is in play.
There's polls. There's a lot of kinds of research. There's focus groups. There's having, you know, tracking panels of people over time. There's all these things you can do to figure out what's going on, and also to do it at, you know, a regional level within specific regions of the state, within specific communities and demographics. Exactly as you say, you just don't do that. You don't pay attention when you think that something's not going to be a problem or an opportunity. And this time it is so night and day different. Wisconsin is, you know, every aspect of everything here is scrutinized because people know. I mean, the one thing I will also say, Wisconsin had 3 out of the past 5 presidential elections had under 1 percentage point margins. So this, it was the closest state in the country in 04. John Kerry and George W. Bush were here over and over and over, like 17 times from the conventions to election day. And it was the second closest state in the country in 2000. It was actually, in terms of numerically, it was closer in 2000 than it was in 04. So Obama blew it out of the water to such a degree. And the fact that Democrats did win both of those contests, it meant that when you look on paper, Wisconsin's, you know, blue from 1984 to 2012 looks fine. But elections have been very hard fought here very often. For whatever reason, that was missed in 2016. It is not missed now. And what we've been doing at our state party is really, my predecessor chair started an organizing program modeled on the Obama neighbor to neighbor model, where you build local teams led by members of their own community that organize volunteers, and the organizers on the staff of the state party, they basically train and mentor these local leaders to build their own canvassing operations. I was elected in 2019 and just have been working to put that on rocket fuel. So we've had this gigantic year-over-year investment in grassroots organizing. And you could sort of see the result of it in our spring Supreme Court election this year, when we had volunteers in every part of the state that could ultimately turn on a dime with coronavirus and switch to teaching people how to request absentee ballots, which is something that is hard to do here and has not been done in significant numbers here before. But we had this massive wave, four times the previous record of absentee ballot requests. We won absentee ballots in a landslide. We defeated a sitting Supreme Court justice for the second time in half a century. And I think maybe helped freak Trump out about mail-in voting, which he's, you know, now dismantling America's most popular institution in order to prevent, which we also have to step down and have a plan around that. But that is the recent history of politics here. The right rigging the system and us investing in organizing to get around that.
So what is the polling look like this time around? I mean, the interesting, you know, change in the dynamic is, I would imagine, you know, whereas the Trump campaign was trying to be very targeted and surgical and quiet while they were doing this so that they wouldn't tip the Clinton campaign off as to, like, maybe you're not as safe in Wisconsin as you think. I would imagine now it's more like nobody's trying to play that game. Everybody realizes we're mobilizing everything in these places. Do you have a sense of what the polling looks like? I mean, are there public polls? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, there's a bunch of public polls. They have us an average of 4 or 5 points up right now. There's, you know, some outliers in both directions. But if you look at the kind of gold standard polls, it's a 4 or 5 point margin right at the edge or just over the edge of the margin of error. No candidate's breaking 50% yet, which is really, really where you want to be, because
right, that's scary.
But yeah.
It's scary that you don't have 50%, right? Like, I would rather a 3 point lead than a with me over 50% than a 5 point lead with me not under with me under 50%. Let's put it that way.
Exactly. And it's just like, especially what everyone is freaked out about is, are people, especially because Trump is so nakedly racist and was so horrible after George Floyd's murder, are there a lot of, you know, white voters who don't want to admit that they support Trump? And so their registry is undecided in polls, but they will actually come home to him on election day. And, you know, with this margin, especially being under 50, we're just going to organize like we're 2 points behind all the way through. And if we get to the end and discover that we wanted a blowout, that is delightful. But under no circumstances do I want us to like let up on the gas for even a second on the basis of polling saying that we're going to be okay, because we tried that and it was a, you know, unparalleled disaster for every human who will ever live. And so this time it is, you know, to the wall, pushing as hard as we can. We're doing these massive virtual phone banks now, calling people who we haven't spoken to before, to find like every possible person who's willing to turn out and vote against Trump, and then help those people. To get an absentee ballot here, you have to upload a photo of your voter ID to a form on the internet to get a ballot sent to the address where you've already proven that you live to register to vote by showing your ID, which is a system literally built by the GOP to keep people out. But we are helping people do that in a massive way. And then if needed, people can hand deliver their absentee ballots if the mail service is screwed up. We just have to do everything we can.
All right. So let me just go back to see if I got what you're saying correctly about what happened in 2016 in terms of the numbers. There was whatever number of voters who went from, you had a tremendous amount of voters stay at home because they didn't like either candidate. And then you had a certain number of voters who went from Obama to Trump, right? And you're saying that we had that those voters, the second group, came from small rural towns who came out to vote in for the first time in years, essentially. And that the voters who stayed at home were basically in Milwaukee, more or less.
That is, yeah, more or less right. There was also a third party vote. I think you left that piece out.
Right. Okay.
There are differences of opinion about how much there was an actual like surge for Trump in rural areas and how much it was just a swing for Trump. And it's hard to figure out exactly from the data, but what's clear is that Trump, you know, there were rural areas of Wisconsin. There are some areas, especially southwestern Wisconsin, that have been blue over and over that turned red in 2016. And there's other areas that have been reddish that turned deep red. There's just like Trump just ran up the score in rural Wisconsin.
And we don't know if that's a function of new rural voters coming in, or just old, you know, or existing blue, you know, existing Democrat votes in those rural areas staying at home.
So we have some information about it. Wisconsin's data is notoriously bad because we have same-day voter registration, which is great. But when someone same-day registers, instead of like changing their existing voter registration, they show up as a new person. And so there's always this effort, you know, there's all this work to do to figure out exactly which voter this is. What we do know for sure is that Western Wisconsin, this swing area that had been blue, went red for Trump, and then we won it back in 2018, and we won it again this spring, in the spring of 2020. And so whether people, you know, just kind of like went on a date with Trump and now are back in the fold, or back in play, or whether it's a different group of people, like that's an area where it's very competitive for us. In Northeast Wisconsin, Green Bay, Appleton, the Fox River Valley area, this whole other region, that is also a big swing region that Trump is obsessed with. And we're fighting for votes there too. Those are kind of the big swings. The Northwest used to be, David Obie was a congressman, Democratic congressman for decades, but that is like it's so kind of in the Fox News thrall. We're organizing, we're closing the margins there, but it's not going blue at this moment. It's very, very tough.
I mean,
yeah.
Wisconsin, like Ohio to some extent, like Michigan to some extent, is and Illinois are states that seem to me to really capture the different dynamics that exist in the American electorate, broadly speaking. I mean, you know, I don't want to over exaggerate, and I think there's some cohorts that aren't sort of represented there, but this, particularly the urban rural dynamic, is captured in these states quite a bit, right? I mean, so, you know, it used to say, like, as Ohio goes, the country goes. I think, I mean, it's sort of like shifted to, let me see how all four of those states are going, or three of them anyways.
There's a comedian from Wisconsin who moved home and set up a website and Twitter account called As Goes Wisconsin, specifically premised on this idea that as goes Wisconsin, so goes the nation. And, you know,
that doesn't sound very funny, Ben.
What's that?
It doesn't sound very funny.
The actual content is excellent.
Okay.
The name of it did not contain the joke.
All right, kid. Yeah. That's fine.
If we win Ohio, we don't have to worry about Wisconsin. I would be delighted for us to do that. But Wisconsin, right now, it's sitting, if you add up all the electoral college votes of the states where Trump is less popular than he is here, it's just shy of 270. And if you add up all the electoral college votes of the states where he's more popular than he is here, it's just shy of 270. So you kind of have to add Wisconsin or hopscotch over Wisconsin and, you know, get an even harder to get safe if you want to win for either candidate. And that's why the convention's here. And it's also why Trump was here on Monday and Pence is here today. And like the GOP is, you know, they see this as the place to make their stand. And
how much of a detriment is it that, I mean, look, Joe Biden is not traveling like Trump is for a number of reasons. How much does that make your job harder?
I think COVID makes it harder, but like there's a real medium is the message aspect to how we're campaigning. We are the party. Biden is the presidential candidate that cares about people, that cares about healthcare, that cares about ending this pandemic. And if we don't end this pandemic, as we've now seen, you can't open the economy and open schools for any lengthy period of time because people are going to get coronavirus and start dying again. And so, like, the GOP is literally, they are back out knocking on doors in person. They're having in-person events. Their state convention, they had 300 people in a room watching Congressman Glenn Grossman start coughing while he tried to say Trump's name. Like, the GOP is, they have their head in the sand. They're acting like it's not happening. And for some of their voters, that is the coolest thing ever. And for a lot of voters, that is like horrible. And, you know, the Biden campaign's decision was to just really focus on public health, including this question of whether he was going to travel here in person. And that conveys how seriously we take the pandemic. Now, everyone in Wisconsin knows the Biden campaign is doing a ton to try to win here, because every time you turn on a screen, you're going to see a Biden ad or a Trump ad, and probably both. that we have organizers everywhere. You can't, people's phones are ringing with our calls all the time. Like, everyone knows that we're a battleground state, that the Biden campaign takes incredibly seriously, but what the Biden campaign is communicating through its actions is that it's just not going to put people's health at risk in order to try to get their vote. And that is actually a good way of getting their vote.
So lastly, Ben, if there are people who want to help out, and you know, your state has been one of the states that I've been sort of like focused on in this regard, but if people want to help out, what can they do? How can they donate money to the state party? Can they do calling? What would be helpful for folks to do if they want to focus on Wisconsin and help you out there?
That is a great two item list of things to do. If you go to wisdems.org, wisdems.org/donate, you can chip in. You go to wisdems.org/volunteer, you can sign up to make calls. And frankly, like, hours and dollars are the things that we need. We're building this gigantic effort to reach out to everybody. We're calling, we're also texting, we're doing social media outreach, all these different things. And when we get money, we use it to hire organizers to recruit volunteers and recruit volunteer leaders. And you can cut out the middleman by volunteering directly, but frankly, we need both. So I'd be so grateful for Majority Report listeners doing that. And I appreciate the question.
Ben, thanks for coming on, talking to us about this. I wish you guys luck. I couldn't feel more confident, at least about you know what you guys are doing. I hope you guys pull it out, obviously for the sake of the country. But it's nice to feel like there's somebody super competent who is working on this. And I appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
All right, folks, there you have it. WisDems. What do you say? WisDems.org? I don't know what the WisDems. Like wisdom? WisDems? I mean, I get it. Wisconsin Democrats. But why not WisconsinDemocrats.org? I'll talk to him about that. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to head into the fun half of the program. We will talk more about, we've got a clip of Bill Clinton. We've got the best endorsement for Joe Biden. And in fact, it is a non-endorsement. Donald Trump talking about Michelle Obama, of course. Trump just rambling. And we've got some Fox and Friends. And of course, Tucker Carlson, very worried about women who are sexually aroused, that is a problem for him. He's very concerned about that. Matt Walsh calling for the Insurrection Act and to invade this country like the Mideast. And Donald Trump has found a line that he likes to use now, apparently. So check all of that out. Don't forget, 3 p.m. today, Nomi is doing her DNC weekly, you know, daily show now. They're doing it all this week. They're going to do it all next week at 3 p.m. This week, only on Friday, it's going to be at noon. And the guests are just nuts that she has on Friday. Like I say, I think Trump's I don't want to tell any tales out of school, but today, Sarah Nelson will be on that program. Nabila Islam, she was a great candidate, I think, believe from Georgia. I interviewed her. Matt Stoller, who's always brilliant, and Francesca Fiorentini, who's both smart and funny. So check that out at 3 p.m. Also, don't forget, your support is what makes this show possible. You go to jointhemajorityreport.com. You not only support the free show, so like, basically, you know, I got into this yesterday a little bit. I have been told for years, do the fun half for the free show, do the interviews for the members. And my attitude has been, no, I want folks like Ben Wicklis, not as sexy. I'm not saying that Ben is not a sexy person. I'm just saying in terms of content, it's not as sexy. Ben is not that sexy as a person, but that's completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
The content. Thank you, Ben. The content is not as sexy right? Like you do an interview with, I don't know, about, I don't know how many times I've done interviews about postal banking, for instance. That's not the sexiest of content for your free show. But it's super important. And so we put it out there on the free show. But it's the members who actually allow us to do that by supporting the, you know, ostensibly supporting the member show. But really what you're doing is you're actually supporting the free show. And then we're doing the free show you're paying for. Does that make sense? Am I talking myself into like a...
Well, I mean, I would put it as like, there's a reason you eat dinner before dessert. But I understand your point too.
How can right. you have your pudding if you don't eat your meat?
That's also another way of putting it. But the point is, when you become a member, you support the free show. And then we give you extra content. It's our members that make this possible. Join the majoritereport.com. Also, sign up for the AM Quickie. We're going to be on break next week. Like I say, Nomi's going to be doing her daily show about the RNC. But the AM Quickie, that is forever. That happens every day. You can get 6-7 minutes of headline news in your podcast feed of by 8 a.m. almost every day now, 8:30 at the latest. So check that out, amquickie.com. You can sign up. It's all free, of course. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 10% off. Jamie, what's happening on the Antifada?
Well, this week on the Antifada, we talk all about the DNC. No, just kidding. I'll leave that to the experts. Going back to actually a conversation we briefly had on this show when I was talking about fascism and whether Trump is a fascist or not, I realized this topic needed a more in-depth treatment, for sure. So this week on the Antifada, we talk about what fascism is. Is it a process? Is it a system of governance? What are fascist economics? Is fascism compatible with neoliberalism? Spoiler alert, yes, it is. We go through a lot of different definitions by a lot of different thinkers and see how they can be mapped on to our current predicament here in the United States. Also, we do a little bit of history and political economy of the U.S. Postal Service, a bailiwick of yours, I know, and how the bipartisan attacks on the Postal Service have contributed to the situation we are currently facing. So that's out for free for everyone to listen to right now, patreon.com/theantifada.
Oh, you know what? That reminds me. We're gonna do a, you know, everybody was like on me during the fun half yesterday to, respond to Crystal Ball and Sager's show. And I said, well, look, if you have something specific you want me to deal with. And so somebody sent me something that Sager did about the post office. It's a little bit splitty, hairy thing, but it's a good jumping off point. But the interesting thing I genuinely don't think that it is a the pre-funding bill was passed in a arguably bipartisan fashion. Arguably, because we don't really know the votes. There's no roll call. There were certainly co-sponsors, Democrats who did it. But broadly speaking, it is far more the agenda of the Republican Party to privatize the Postal Service than it is the Democratic Party. If only because AFSCME is such an important part of the Democratic electorate that they don't want that to go away. I think they're happy to have it a little bit disempowered in certain instances, but I don't think they want it to go away. But with that said, you look at why DeJoy, and they haven't rolled back everything as far as I can tell, but why DeJoy has backed off on some of these, you know, so-called cost savings measures. It is because of the universality of the Postal Service. I mean, this is the same thing that happens with Social Security. The value of having something of a policy that is universal, that is not means tested, that is universal, is its political durability. The reason why DeJoy is having to back off these measures is not because I am crowing about them, or Chuck Schumer's crowing about them. The reason why he's having to back off these measures is because people in Iowa, people in Montana, people in rural areas are calling their Republican senators and congresspeople and saying, hey, I can't get my medicine. The vets are calling their Republican governors and saying, I can't get my medicine. I can't get my postal service. I can't get my mail. I can't ship out packages. That piece I sent away for to fix my tractor's not here. And that universality causes pressure and gets much more response. And that is why they, you know, George Bush tried to privatize Social Security, and it basically was the beginning of the end for that dude. When universal programs have political durability, period, end of story.
Yeah, not to mention the kinds of hoops they make the poor jump through are dehumanizing and oppressive.
Yes, no, that is that. There's a moral argument about it as well, and just sort of a reflection on, like, you know, what the point of society is. But just sheerly from a political perspective, the universality has political durability. Matt.
Last night on TMBS, we had Dustin Gastella, a writer and a member of Teamsters 623 in Philadelphia, to talk about how the left sort of took their eye off the ball with regards to a Tennessee Valley Authority labor dispute over them their attempts to outsource some IT jobs, and allowed the right wing to run the Steve Bannon playbook on H-1B visas and fly the America First banner over the TVA and save the jobs of those workers. So we kind of talk about that in the context of this sort of post office and public goods, and how we need to take these inheritances of actually good institutions seriously and protect them and expand them. So yeah, patreon.com/TMBS.
All right, folks, see you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 boy, back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it, you might throw.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Dennerke's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Dennerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break for people.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck. Reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Homo says what?
What?
Almost says what?
A hell of a lot of bang. 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 A hell of a lot of bang.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
See, Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck 'em! Fuck 'em! Fuck 'em!
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday.
My birthday.
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy.
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on.
Well, come on.
Well, come on.
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy. Pussy.